On our website, you can go to the show where we talk to some of the children who were sentenced and how their lives were destroyed after coming out of jail. That does it for Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shufto Kadus, Armate Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julia Crosby, Nikhila, Hugh Grant, Jessel Noor, Jessica Lee, Ryan Devereaux, Dina Guzdar, Manal Khan, and Vestika Dars. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website, democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Kay, and welcome to today's edition of Concert Billboard. Let's cover the next 3 days. Monday, February 14th, we have over in Williston Park at the Memories Bar and Grill at 6 p.m., Bryce Lawson. Also on Monday.
Okay, we're sorry about that. It's mislabeled. It said Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Didn't say the date. So obviously that was last week. You missed all those concerts. We're not even going to play them. Instead, we're just going to launch right into Off the Wall. To everybody, the program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Again, sorry about the concert billboard. It wasn't my fault. And I'm sure there are good concerts playing out there. Just look them up somewhere. Plug it into the internet. I'm sure that'll help you. Hi, Kyle. How are you?
Hi, E. What's going on?
I'm doing okay. Just a little flustered. You know, every time something happens, something else happens to make it even more fun. I'll say this, though. This is the last week. This week will be live. Next week will be on tape. Next week will be, I believe, the pillow fighting episode.
Awesome.
Up in Canada, yeah. And the reason for that is next week is when I start my grand jury duty, which, you know, I've been looking this up. And I might not get picked. Apparently there's some kind of a lottery or something. And also, maybe when I start telling them about myself, they won't want me. But if I do get picked, it's a month of 9 to 5. And It's not something I'm reading up about it. It's all this secrecy. You're not supposed to talk about what you do or basically you decide if somebody should be accused of a crime. And you're not allowed to tell anybody anything else. A grand jury can listen to testimony from the prosecutor, but they may not hear testimony from the defense. The defendant can attend, but they can't ask any questions. They can't defend themselves. They just basically have to hear what the prosecutor says and decide in secret and have all their notes destroyed afterwards. So there's never a record of it. Just, you know, when you look at the websites that explain this, and invariably the question is asked, why a grand jury is necessary? The answer is, we've been doing it this way for hundreds of years. That's not an answer to me. That's not an answer. That's just saying that we're stuck in some kind of tradition, which may not be the best kind of tradition to have. I think if you're going to accuse somebody of something, it should be open. The person should have the opportunity to defend themselves right then and there, and evidence should be presented from both sides, and then you take it from there.
Yeah, this is like the part of the trial where they get really grilled. And it's really important, and I think the thing is, you go and you know, you find out if you're actually going to be drawn at random and whatnot. And I think that you can research, you can find out how justice is working or if it is there at all in this tradition.
But I don't know if I'm allowed to criticize anything. I don't know if I'm allowed to harbor any kind of thoughts critical of the process. I'm not sure about that. I could find myself hauled into something. I've found in contempt of court. I already have contempt for courts. So, I mean, is it that much of a revelation to find me in contempt of court? You don't have to look very far to find me that way.
Well, you're going to do important research and investigate and find out if this system still works.
Yeah, but I can't tell anybody about it.
Well, you can think it.
I can't think outwardly. I can't even communicate with blinks of my eyes.
Well, I think it is important that you go.
This just goes against so many things that I believe in. I don't know how I'm going to survive it. I really don't.
Well, it is important that you go because you might get dismissed as not having to participate, and that would be great.
But that's also going to annoy me. If I get dismissed, I'm going to be like, what do you mean? I'm not good enough for you? What is it about me that doesn't that doesn't qualify for this kind of a thing? Why shouldn't I be there with everybody else deciding someone's fate?
Well, if you do get dismissed from this duty, you really deserve an explanation because you're playing by the rules. You're participating. You're there to make sure justice works.
I hear they have Wi-Fi, but you know what? I'm not sure they have free Wi-Fi. Can you imagine that? You go there to serve on a jury.
Right.
You're hauled in there. You got to sit in a room for however many hours waiting to be selected or not selected. And then you got to pay them to use the internet. That would be wrong. That would be so. In fact, they don't even pay for your lunch. You got to pay for that, too. I'm going to lose money on this deal. By the time I get out there, and it's $40 a day. You know, you gotta drive all the way out there. That's in Riverhead. You've got to pay for God knows what. They'll probably charge you for parking. Who knows? You know? It doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun. But again, yes, it is a responsibility. It's a duty. And I'm more than happy to be a part of things if they're worthwhile, if they actually mean something. But if they don't mean something, if they're not worthwhile, I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell people that it's a big waste of time, that justice is not served in this way, and there are these kinds of holes in the system where you could drive a truck through if you had the right connections.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing you tell people.
Yeah. I think it's your responsibility going, you know, playing by the rules, jumping through the hoops, and participating if there is, you know, a serious loophole or way people that justice isn't working properly. That kind of stuff I think you could definitely speak to and make an impact. And the details of it, fine, you can deal with the secrecy and all of that, you know, details of particular cases, but the way it works generally, I think if you are required to participate and you get chosen, then I think, you know, you can talk about the broad mm-hmm. way the process works.
Well, yeah, I guess on that note, well, there's a programming addendum, I suppose, is what I should give here. We had originally planned, starting next Monday at 9 p.m. each day here on WUSB, a little five-minute show today in the grand jury, hosted by myself. And after consultation, I'm told that probably isn't a good idea to give a summation of everything that was discussed and happened, and have audio recordings of various things that happened in the grand jury room. I'm told that probably would be frowned upon.
Right.
So we're not going to be presenting that program every day at 9 o'clock with a summation of what I went through in the grand jury that day.
And that's the backup plan. We originally
And I was really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, the original plan was a satellite feed.
Well, there were a number of stations that took an interest in this, more than our usual number of affiliates, and I'm sorry to disappoint them as well, and of course all the listeners and defendants that were depending on this this bit of information, but that's just the way it is. Those are the rules. I don't write the rules.
Yeah. It's good to know them, though.
Yeah, it's good to know the rules, I suppose, and to take note of everything. So, you know, I'll be taking note of whatever I can take note of, but I'm not allowed to take notes.
Right, and any notes you do take are shredded.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy.
Crazy. At least our system, we don't wear the silly wigs. But I think that's about where the silliness ends. Mm. I mean, it becomes very silly after that. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Speaking of silliness and craziness and courts and things like that.
Yes.
My favorite idiot, Peter King, the representative on Long Island, Nassau County, he's going to be holding hearings on radical Islam. And today, over in Massapequa Park, about 130 protesters demonstrated outside his offices. Here's the thing. Some were in support. Some were against the politicians' proposed congressional hearings meant to examine the threat of radical Islam in the U.S. It's going to be just like the McCarthy hearings all over again. Have you ever been a Muslim? It's really a bad idea to castigate an entire group of people based on the actions of some. Because if we do this, then we should do it for all kinds of other groups as well. All right, we should have the Chinese up there talking about, what do you think about child labor? And are you, in fact, hiring people under certain age? You can have every single group with their particular cross to bear.
Right.
There is nobody who is exempt. There is nobody.
And maybe who they're, giving preferential treatment or what communities they're supporting.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta, let people be in their groups, religious or otherwise, to some degree. I don't understand. Does this have anything to do with the mosque being built?
He definitely has his opinions on the mosque.
Right.
But I'm sure they'll come up in this.
Uh-huh.
But more about what happened today. The Catholic nonprofit charity group known as Pax Christi, it's the Interfaith Alliance of Long Island. Other groups were behind organizing this anti-King rally. They called it a pray-in, actually, when they found out about the proposed hearing. I never thought I'd be on the side of a pray-in, but I was on the side of this one. The pray-in was part of a broader effort today, including a national call-in encouraging opponents of the hearing to call King's office. When supporters of King learned of the demonstration, they organized a counter-protest. The two simultaneous events held in a small parking lot in the shadow of the Long Island Railroad, because that's where they had it for some reason, made for a study in contrast. Opponents of the hearings performed classic 60s peace songs such as "This Land Is Your Land" and "We Shall Overcome," even as they came under attack from King's supporters. just a little bit of friendly advice here. Guys, you got to get over the 60s, It's time to update the songs, time to have new songs, time to have new people involved. You're just going to be labeled as aging hippies that just do the same thing over and over again. And there's nothing wrong with what was done in the past. I mean, it was a lot of heroes on that side. They stopped the war. They woke up a nation. Important things, but it's not today. It's the 2010s.
Yeah, I mean,
we need new. I mean, come on, is there something that wasn't sung back in the 1960s that applies today?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, people can recycle, they could remix, they could sample pieces of those songs when they protest and when they chant, but they really got to repurpose it and have it, give it a new flair, right? Not mm-hmm. just the same old thing. And it's good to give a nod to the past and a little wink to verses that worked, but come on, yeah, let's get creative.
Yeah. I mean, the other side, I don't know. I mean, they've updated their music. They're not playing German marching songs anymore. They're doing other things. They've moved on, and they're playing Ted Nugent and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm shocked, and I'm embarrassed for you. You call yourselves Americans, one woman shouted. What are you afraid of, that you might find something out? That's somebody from the other side. King, who is somehow, I really would like to know how this happened, chairman of the Committee on Homeland Security, was recently asked to focus his inquiry on this doesn't even make sense the way it's written, to focus his inquiry on examine extreme extreme environmentalist and neo-Nazis.
Wow.
Uh-huh. But King declined.
Like eco-terror?
Okay, someone is suggesting that if he's going to focus on terrorism, he should focus on extreme environmentalists. I don't know if they were serious about that. It's incredible how people who spray paint something, like maybe a new house that has destroyed a forest, they spray paint, they become terrorists by doing that.
Yeah.
Yet somebody who opens fire in a parking lot or in a school, they're not considered terrorists. I'd like to know what the difference is. I mean, I know what the difference is between somebody who sprays paint and someone who fires a gun. I'm saying, what's the difference between a terrorist, a quote-unquote terrorist from some foreign country someplace that you're afraid of, and somebody right in your own country who kills people and terrorizes people? Why are they not terrorists? Why are the hearings not about people carrying guns, about people who have complete ease of getting massive weapons, and the angry people that are wandering around everywhere, aggressive drivers, who just are pissed off at something.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is it exactly that they're so angry about? That's something I'd like to hear that in a hearing. I'd like to have a hearing on anger, American anger. Why are Americans so angry?
And there's a distinction to be made as far as tactics go and priorities when dealing with the effect of some of this anger.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, King dismissed pretty much all of that, saying the committee will continue to examine the threat of Islamic radicalization, and I will not allow political correctness to obscure a real and dangerous threat to the safety and security of the citizens of the United States. Well, how many Islamic terrorists have struck? Obviously, 9/11 was the big one. Okay.
Uh-huh.
But are we completely forgetting Oklahoma City? Are we completely forgetting all kinds of other bombings over the years from various groups, from Croatian nationalists to Puerto Rican nationalists?
The Olympics in Atlanta, wasn't that a...
Yeah, that was... I don't even know who did that. Did they ever find the guy who did that?
I have no
idea,
but I remember
it. They accused some guy,
it.
And then it turned out he was innocent, and nobody even talks about that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and... It's wrong to point the finger at one particular group and say, yeah, they're responsible for everything, and they're the ones that... how about we look into what might be fueling radical Islam in the first place?
Right.
I mean, it's not just out of thin air. There's cause and effect.
The conditions that create that mm-hmm. sentiment.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's one of those conditions. I mean, this is not something that I would want to say... because of this, it's going to lead to that, and therefore you must not do this because otherwise it turns into some kind of, I don't know, just a threat to certain actions that make you think in the wrong way. Well, let me explain what it is I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
Israeli settlements. The United States on Friday vetoed a draft UN Security Council resolution condemning Israeli settlements on Palestinian territory after the Palestinians refused to withdraw the Arab drafted text. Okay, we've heard all this before, but the difference here is that the Israelis have been building settlements illegally with impunity and really upsetting people in the occupied lands. British Ambassador Mark Lyle Grant, speaking on behalf of Britain, France, Germany, condemned the settlements, saying they're illegal under international law. The United States has criticized them. But when it comes down to actually condemning them, to have a statement saying this is wrong, we turn around and we say, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to say this is wrong. Even though it's wrong, even though we said it's wrong, we're not going to say it's wrong. We're not going to say officially it's wrong. That is the kind of thing that radicalizes people, all right? That's kind of, if you really believe in something, what I'm saying before, if you really believe in something, yes, stand up for it. And and you shouldn't let the fear of somebody becoming all radicalized keep you from standing up for what you believe in. But what are we standing up for here? This is clearly something that's wrong, yet we're refusing to say it's wrong. And it just seems like such an easy thing to do. If we were to stand up and criticize our allies, our supposed allies, maybe it would knock some sense into them. And maybe it would calm things down a little bit. Maybe there wouldn't be such hostility and aggression. And that's the real reason to do it. Not because you're afraid of the aggression, because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something that we seem to constantly be avoiding. And that's just sad. Continuing with these upcoming hearings, Mr. King's hearings are discriminatory and self-defeating, said one demonstrator, Dr. Sheikh Ubad of the Muslim Peace Coalition of the USA. No doubt he'll be investigated. If Representative Peter King is sincere about the homegrown terrorist threat, as we all are, including American Muslims, for they have the most to lose, and he must invite the director of the FBI and other top law enforcement agencies. He has not done so. He continued, King must hold hearings on all terrorist groups, including the ones who pose the biggest threat, such as the armed militias, who, according to news reports, are arming for a war and threatening even the president of the United States. And he has not invited those people. He has not included those groups. Some supporters of King argued that if most Muslims are not extremist, they shouldn't be afraid of what the hearings will bring out. In other words, if you don't have anything to hide, then you have nothing to fear. Have I heard that before? Mm-hmm. Others suggested some important revelations could emerge. I'd like to see a solid hearing where they look through throughout the allegations in the American community. There's a lot of radical Islamists who are ready to take action against this country, whether they be natural-born citizens, whether they come from other countries, said Jim Duffy, a member of the Conservative Party of Suffolk County. Pax Christi's Long Island coordinator, Sister Janine Clark, said she hopes King can find a better way to address the issue. We, too, are for national security. We're not opposed to that, of course, but we don't think the whole Muslim community should bear the brunt of and be called terrorists. And we just see it day after day. We see various ways people lash out and express fear and just castigate an entire group of people. Every time a mosque opens its doors or, God forbid, expands a little bit, you see people protesting against it. No such thing with churches or synagogues or anything like that.
Right.
Think of all the people marching in the streets of Libya, of Egypt, of Algeria, of Tunisia, of so many other countries over there, marching for democracy, marching for freedom.
Right, right.
Are those our enemies? Or are those people we should look to as models and maybe do something similar? Not that it would ever happen here, because there's nothing wrong with this country. We can never improve things, right?
Yeah.
But over there, we see a lot of people showing some courage, showing some guts. And I think that needs to be encouraged. And we need to define our friends, stand by them. And yes, Libya is the latest North African country to experience, well, this article is about internet trouble, not so much revolution in streets, but apparently the internet has been yanked a couple of times, but not very effectively. They're having rolling brownouts of internet access and then coming right back up. The cause of those internet service cuts remain uncertain. Possibilities include a government crackdown and or just internet traffic overload, or maybe simple power outages. But the thing is, it's all hitting the fan in Libya as well. And Colonel mm-hmm. Gaddafi may be on his way out as well. And it just keeps rolling through the region. You wouldn't think Libya would have had this happen so easily. There are other countries where nobody knows for sure if anything's going to happen, if there will be change, like Syria, or Iran or Iraq. Yeah, it'd be something to see the effect if this happens in Iraq. I'd like to see that.
Yeah,
it's what happens when people wake up and say, "Enough already. We've had it, and we want to change."
Yeah, know? And they're using the tools that are available, and the regimes, the people in control, they're showing their true colors. You know, a mm-hmm. lot of it's very interesting, especially in Libya right now. Gaddafi's very indignant and certain that he's going to stay, and he's declaring that he is a martyr till the end and is going to fight. And
he accused his opponents of being on LSD. I mean, he said that's what he said. He said these people are on drugs or on LSD. And if anybody looks like they're on LSD, just take a look at Colonel Gaddafi.
Yeah, he kind of does.
Walking around with the sunglasses and the bushy hair. And I mean, I think the look is great. Flowing robes and things like that.
Very unique.
Leaders to always look as weird as possible.
Yes.
But the guy is not a nice guy.
No.
All these dictators many of whom have sons that follow in their footsteps.
Their mouthpiece.
I'm not saying George W. Bush followed in his father's footsteps in that way. No, don't make me the person that says that we're exactly the same over here because we have an oil baron running the country, and then a few years later his son is running the country, and that we're moving back into the dark ages and all this oppression and racism and censorship and clampdowns and people living in poverty and things like that. I am not saying that. Don't make me say that. No, I'm talking about the Mideast. It's totally different. Totally
no,
different.
You're not saying that. No, I don't think anyone would accuse you
Why
of saying that.
Why would people say a thing like that?
Yeah.
It does make you think, though.
Yeah, it does.
So, so we're watching what's going on over there, watching all the dictators fall. In the end, it's people power.
Yeah, and when you hear interviews with people, they're saying, yeah, this is definitely going to end. Libya is going to change, and this regime is on its way out. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to get coverage because they rule with such an iron fist as far as journalism and getting the word out. But there are like camera phone stories and stuff like that coming out.
What networks have you been watching, Kyle, to hear the information that comes across?
I was watching BBC just this afternoon.
BBC? Wow. Okay. Well, that's good. You get BBC. Anything else?
Well, we also have access to English Al Jazeera.
Al Jazeera. You must be some kind of terrorist. That's Muslim. That's radicalized cable. When you tell people you watch Al Jazeera, the looks you get, but you can't watch Al Jazeera around here.
That's changing, though.
Is it changing?
Yes.
Is it really changing?
You would be amazed at how many Americans, how many normal, regular...
I'm going on the internet right now to see if any cable company or satellite provider has...
Joe Sixpacks are Joe the Plumbers are watching Al Jazeera.
Yeah, the only way Joe the Plumber is ever going to watch English Al Jazeera is if there's a football game on it.
And, okay, all right.
That's not going to happen anytime soon. But Al Jazeera is really, they're from the region. They're from Qatar.
Yes.
The coverage has been incredible, to say the least. Now, we're able to see it because of the Canadian satellite dish. And in Canada, they're not as restrictive with what gets aired.
Oh, Canada.
And we kid ourselves into saying that we don't censor here and it's free and open. But if you don't provide the choice in the first place, it's not so free and open, is it? And people here just cannot get that channel because of the fear. And there's no other reason. You could say, oh, no, there's no demand for it. There's plenty of demand. There's plenty of interest. People aren't as stupid as the powers that be would like you to believe. We're not given the opportunity. BBC, when you said BBC before, most people don't get BBC. We're lucky we have a cable system in Long Island that actually provides BBC World News. It's a rarity.
Yeah.
And they're kind of mainstream, but they provide good coverage.
Well,
even CNN International is very hard to get unless you're overseas.
Yes. It is getting more popular, and the programming, the providers do listen if you scream. I mean, a lot of people have to really want it before a lot of the American providers actually add it to their programming lineup. And you know, fairness, English Al Jazeera broadcast is available free to air, but you have to build your own satellite. I mean, that's difficult, and people aren't going to go out and buy old satellites and hook it all up, you know, with scrap parts just for the fun of it. That's not accessibility. I mean, you got to be a hobbyist to build systems like that. And you got to be really dedicated. And so what's left is being able to demand it or make the request with your provider, whomever you're paying for cable or other sorts of television, no matter how you get it or if it's on a domestic satellite. They're the ones that most people have access to. And so to that end, people really have to request it before they actually get exposed to this resource. And you can get a little bit of Al Jazeera on the internet, I'm told.
Yeah, we can get everything on the internet.
Right, right.
But lot of people, we might be shocked by this, but a lot of people don't have access to the internet.
True.
And those who do have access to the internet, not all of them have the ability to play things. I'm thinking of relatives of mine, for instance. I always explain to them how they can watch video online. They don't do it.
Right.
And, a lot of people don't have this ability.
And that medium, it's getting better, but that's a harder medium. I mean, that's not people relaxing, you know, in the comfort of their living room, you know, to actually absorb what's going on. You're sitting at a computer, you get distracted, people are messaging you. Now, yeah, there's all kinds of different platforms that people can use the internet on, so it is getting more comfortable to stream things. But, you know, the real crux of it is getting access when people are actually listening.
Now, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for Al Jazeera, and they say Al Jazeera English is unavailable to cable viewers in the U.S., with the exception of those in Toledo, Ohio, of all places, Burlington, Vermont, and Washington, D.C., three places in the entire country.
Wow.
Many analysts consider this to be effectively a blackout, and they are right. It is a blackout. So we're lucky. With the Canadian dish, Canadians can get this very easily. People
right.
in the world can get it very easily. And
it's normal. It's considered a resource.
It is. They have stock market reports and sports scores, and just like everybody else, but they also have interviews that are very interesting and in-depth, and they have live coverage, which is unmatched by anybody else.
And they don't question it. It's not like a big to-do. Oh, no, Al Jazeera, we can't possibly watch that. There's no stigma attached. It's considered programming, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it'd be great to see more.
Time Warner Cable in New York City, they offer Russia Today, which is a propagandist channel. It really is.
Yes.
When they were in the war with Georgia, it was simply unbelievable. The headlines that they were flashing on the screen and the propaganda. And they have CCTV, the English channel from China, from Beijing. And that is pure propaganda as well. It's fascinating to watch. I watch it all the time, but it's propaganda. Now, if Al Jazeera does not compare to that at all, it's a lot more balanced.
It is.
And, yeah, it's – I mean, some of the people they interview, they might be very slanted. That's entirely possible, as is the case on CNN or Fox News. But you need that variety of viewpoints. That's really the only way to find out what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we do want to take phone calls today, but we want to also bring up an important topic that we've been meaning to talk about for the last couple of weeks. And since we won't be on live next week,
right.
It's important that we actually devote some time to this. And that is the high-speed rail controversy. Or maybe it's not even a controversy. Maybe it hasn't even approached that in this country yet. But a couple of weeks ago, President Obama announced plans to spend a huge amount of money. What was it? $56 billion. $56
billion
on developing high-speed rail throughout this country. So that the goal was to have high-speed rail available to 80% of Americans in 20 years. And when you and I heard that, we were jumping up and down thinking, wow, this is amazing. This is incredible. This is exactly what we should have in this country. And I got to say, the reaction I've heard since then, in the media, from fellow Americans, from people that even agree that high-speed rail is good, has been so disappointing, so sad. And it's convinced me that it's never going to happen because of this attitude
right.
where people basically say, well, I only want it if it's going to be in my neighborhood. I don't want it for any part of the other the rest of the country. Republicans, the party of no, of course, saying that, this is ridiculous. We can't spend this much money. We can't spend any money. We can't develop these things. It sounds like socialism. And we have cars and we have airplanes and that's all we need. I mean, look around. Look around this nation at the poor, pathetic mass transit systems we have
right.
and how they have not changed at all in the last couple of decades. We were driving around the other day and there was a train passing us. Actually, the train was not passing us. The Long Island Railroad, we were passing it. It was going full speed, I guess, down the track, but cars on a two-lane road were going faster. I mean, come on, really? This is what we consider effective transit in this country? Maybe people here don't know that it's possible to go faster than that on a train. We've been overseas. We've been to many countries. We've
yes.
been to Germany. We've been to Scandinavia. We've been to France. We've been to all sorts of places. I've been to even more than that.
Yeah, you've been to quite a few. You've been over to Asia a little bit.
Asia and England even. And trains go very fast. We've been on trains that go in excess of 150 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And that's not that uncommon. You get places fast. It's a comfortable way to travel. And it's not that expensive. It really isn't. So you look over there and you see systems that work. What I'd like to know is, who out there is complaining? Who in these countries is saying, wow, what a horrible thing that we have here is high-speed rail, whether it be South Korea, whether it be Japan, whether it be Germany or England or France or Spain or anywhere anywhere. Oh, China, especially China. China is pouring money into high-speed rail.
Yes.
Very smart move. I mean, they could fly places, they could drive places, but you cannot substitute high-speed rail because, well, why? Why would you say high-speed rail is better than those things?
Well, I think it's exactly right. They're adding it. They're diversifying their portfolio, if you were, of modes to transport people and goods and support their economy. And I think there's trade-offs for all of these modes. And particularly, you use different fuel, you use different infrastructure, different methods to have, an aircraft network and flights moving people around. Whereas with trains, you use other types of fuel and other networks to get cargo and people around. And I think there's arguments to be made. I mean, rail can move people and goods around on a different type of fuel, not jet fuel. They use diesel fuel and other things like that to move people very efficiently. They run diesel generators to have these electric locomotives transport people. And some of the ones we've seen in Europe and in other places are incredibly efficient and remarkable, whether they have a wire and they're completely electric or a hybrid diesel electric system. It's a very, very efficient way to move people around, and you can move a lot more people than, for instance, a single jetliner. And so the cost ends up being a lot less because you're not paying for jet fuel and you have more people dividing the cost of that method of transport. And there's many, many other arguments. I think it's just a really crucial thing that with transport, you must diversify. You have to have a lot of different ways. It's like bicycling, walking, cars, planes, and trains are also in the mix. And we have a serious lack in our train system.
That's putting it mildly, it really is. But just to show you some numbers here. By the way, I have Trans-Europe Express underneath us. You can't hear it, Carl, but it's a train song. All about the European train system and all that, which, by the way, it didn't take that long to put together. I think they started the high-speed rail in the 60s or 70s.
Right.
And it has grown phenomenally. It's always growing, always expanding.
I do want to add, so with this $56 billion that Obama was committing to or wanting to get some action with, they want to first sort of phase in retrofitting of existing lines. And we need to see coordination between regional carriers, local transit systems, as well as the national ones that do exist to coordinate and decide, you know, whether it's freight or passengers nationally and how they interface with regional and local systems. We need to decide how we're going to retrofit those systems, what kind of locomotives we're going to put on those lines, and then how we're going to proceed and how we're going to make those lines usable for fast.
We first have to all agree that it's a good idea, and that's why I want to hear from people who think it's not a good idea.
Right.
Because I just don't get the logic. It's something that gets you places quickly, cheaply, and without all the craziness of airports and things like that. And it encourages travel. It encourages commerce between places.
True.
And it's just, it makes things so much easier,
well,
more
absolutely.
Pleasant.
That was another example I hadn't thought of. I was speaking to efficiency just a second ago, but the amount of commerce that places along a major line and subsequent regional lines, the amount of travel that would exist. I know a lot of foreigners that come to the States, they end up renting cars and driving around the country. It would encourage much more local spending and more travel, mm-hmm. an abundance of people coming to visit if they had an efficient way to move about the United States other than, you know, renting a car and being out on the open road. I think people would either spend more money because they've saved it in travel costs, or they would come more frequently as a result.
All right, so to these numbers, high-speed rail actually in the United States, it doesn't really exist at all. I mean, we can call the Acela Express high-speed rail, but, you know, it the speed that the Acela achieves, you know what the average speed is? The average speed of the Acela?
Miles an hour or kilometers?
Miles an hour.
Miles an hour.
Yeah.
80.
80. That's a good guess. I mean, it can go up to 150.
Okay.
150 miles an hour. I mean, that's what it was portrayed as doing when it was first introduced.
Okay.
Is that, you want to stick with that guess? 80 is the average, you say?
Yeah, I mean, you said average.
That's a little less, a little more than half.
A little more than half?
You really think it's that bad?
Okay, all right. So yeah, we'll say 130.
130 is the average. No, the average is 68, Kyle. 68 miles an hour is the average this thing goes. It only achieves a higher speed in two short areas, which I think they're in Rhode Island and Massachusetts.
That's slower than a microbus.
It's incredible. And if you ever watch the Long Island Railroad here, the diesels, they go about 30 miles an hour. It's incredible. It's pathetic. So we don't really have high-speed rail in this country. And I got to say, the Acela, they're doing it completely wrong as well, because they basically kick all the non-business people off that train. You can only buy business class or first class. You can't buy anything else.
Oh, boy.
So what does that say? That basically makes it this elite thing.
It's a bit of classism.
Yeah, totally. So it's being done wrong to start with. Now, the Republicans and opponents will say, well, this is not something government should get involved in. It's something that private enterprise should get involved in. Really, name a country where private enterprise started an entire rail system. It always starts with the government laying out the infrastructure.
Yes.
Corporations don't build highways. They don't build train tracks. Maybe they take over, like in England, some private enterprises took over various train lines, turned into a lot of confusion. But you know what? The train lines are still there.
And governments control the right-of-ways in a lot of cases. And that's the first part of getting permits and getting access for developers and whatnot, is who owns the land. You know, DNR has to, Department of Natural Resources, and those entities have to be on board. You can't go at this just privately and expect it to work very
quickly.
Plus,
there has to be some amount of subsidization by the government to make it possible in the first place. Because if you just string up rails in various places, corporations are just going to want to go to where the most profit is and not serve the places where there isn't as much profit. This is how it works around the world. Governments put money into this because it's an investment. You could say it doesn't make any money. Really, it doesn't make any money? How do you define not making any money? When your citizens are able to get from one part of the country to another easily, when you're not crippled if another volcano goes off in Iceland,
yes,
and you're still able to get places, that seems like wealth to me, wealth of a different sort. Maybe it's not making money hand over fist, but you're providing a valuable service, an essential service that that would not be there without that kind of support.
I think also accessibility. This just struck me, like all of these people that are retiring, this entire generation of boomers, they're not going to be able to be driving forever. I remember when my grandfather was trying to get his license renewed, he tried several times before he finally lost his license, and that was crushing to him. But he loved to travel and stuff, and he really enjoyed trains. And I think this entire generation of people that are going to be retiring and maybe spending more time traveling, they would be the first people to get behind this and want to be able to move around and travel and engage with their relatives around the country without the hassle of flight. And,
if
and
prices
cost.
Are kept reasonable, right, not priced out of people's possible travel budgets.
Yes.
And if the routes make sense, I mean, I hear all kinds of horror stories, and these are being used as fuel against the whole idea in the first place, such as, well, in California, they're building stations that aren't actually in cities, and then you have to commute to the actual city from the station.
That's
stupid,
not right,
things like that can easily be fixed with a little common sense.
But I just think about the independence. We're all about autonomy and independence in this country, and having that extra mode, having a solid infrastructure, that idea that you can get on a train and go anywhere, is serious, as a serious boon to independence. And so
I
wanted to add that.
Also, let's look at the airline industry and how subsidized that is.
Yeah.
I mean, we're pointing at private enterprise and saying that's the answer to everything. It's not really the answer. If you look at the airline industry and how it's constantly being bailed out, And we're paying the price for that, for something that is not as convenient, a lot more polluting, and much more of a hassle to get on in the first place, and a lot more dangerous, too.
Yeah.
All right, so taking a look at these numbers, and again, our phone number is 631-632-9872 if you want to join the discussion. We're on for another 15 minutes or so. So the United States really doesn't have any high-speed rail to speak of. Let's look at England. England only has 113 kilometers of what is considered high-speed rail. It's not very much. They have a lot of trains,
right,
but they don't go that fast. But they still have a much better system, and it's a lot easier for them to upgrade to high-speed rail when they see fit to do that.
Right.
It's also a much smaller place, but they are able to... they're ahead of us as far as high-speed rail, tiny as they are. Turkey, 235 kilometers. Again, not very much, but you don't think of Turkey as having high-speed rail at all, but they do. They see the importance of it. And guess what? They're more than doubling this. They have 510 kilometers under construction right now. South Korea, another tiny place, 330 kilometers of high-speed rail with another 82 under construction. Then we go to Japan, 1,906 kilometers of high-speed rail with another 590 under construction. I don't know where they find the space, but they're building more. And, of course, this doesn't count other types of rail. High-speed rail is just one of them, but commuter rails that go faster than what we have here anyway.
Right.
They're covered. They really are covered. Spain, 1,963 kilometers with another 1,700 under construction. France, 1,872, another 234 under construction. Germany, 1,032, with another 378 under construction. And China, 4,840 kilometers in operation right now, with another 15,000 under construction.
What?
Yes, that is what China is doing.
Three times as much under construction.
And there is no reason why that could not work here. If it can work in China, a huge place with lots of people,
15,000?
And they can use every single one of the same arguments that the opponents to high-speed rail here are using.
Sure.
But they're not. They're actually investing in it. And they're going to have a system that's going to last forever, that will get them around, that will save a ton of money and make things so much easier.
And likely integrate and scale out. I mean, can you imagine after that 15,000 is done, if they wanted more or if they wanted to expand into other countries, it would be so readily available. They just have to hook these things up maybe with other countries or other rural parts of that country.
That'd be so easy to get around. We, on the other hand, by not acting on this, we're voting for third world train systems, massive pollution, and no improvement in any real way. You won't be seeing money pouring into your bank account because we don't build high-speed rail. You will basically see the same thing, and life will be just as difficult, and you won't see improvement in technology around you, and you'll hear the same complaints, and more wars will be started, and it's so depressing. It really is.
And it is depressing, but I think the important thing is people continue this discussion. And
how about start the discussion? Because I'm not seeing it anywhere.
Well, we've started a little bit, but
we have. Yes.
What I mean is, people need to talk about it. They need to request this. They need to talk in their communities. They need to write editorials to newspapers. And instead of spending this $56 billion on defense and stuff like that, we need to spend it on infrastructure. And I think that it ought not to just vanish. And people shouldn't be so resigned. And cynical, when the real idea is, look at other countries and start being in action about this within their communities and within the nation and within this continent, this part of the world.
Are you ready to go into delay?
I think I'm ready.
All right, we're going to move into delay now and take your phone call, 631-632-9872.
Hi, I'm Gina from the Go-Go's, and you're listening to USWUSB Stony Brook.
And we're back. Thanks, Go-Go's, for that. I haven't heard from them in a while.
In delay.
You're in delay, yes. We're both in delay this time. Sorry about last week again, where you didn't go into delay.
That's okay.
That was
no worse for the wear.
That was interesting.
All right.
But here's the problem.
What?
We don't have any phone calls, and I think this sort of parallels what we're talking about, that people don't see this as an important issue, that this is not something that concerns us. Are we living in such a sad state that we can't envision wanting to travel outside of our own little zone and go other places easily and basically...
Well, people
explore the rest of the country.
Right. I mean, people, please call up. We all, like, people are okay with commuting. They commute to work. They commute to big cities. What if that commute was one or two or three states away? I mean, it's amazing. Imagine a world where this was possible. Because
well,
I guarantee you,
it's not just work. Imagine it's recreation or visiting people or just going to a different place.
Absolutely.
It takes longer to get to New York City from here by train than it does to drive. That should not be. It's also a lot cheaper to drive than to take the train. That should not be.
Right.
But imagine if it took half an hour instead of the 2 hours it takes right now. That's entirely possible if you have a modernized train network. It's possible for you to get to Chicago in only a few hours if you have a modernized train network, which we do not have right now.
Right.
And we need to start it. We need to build it someplace. We need
to do with what rail we have, what other countries have said and what Obama has said, retrofitting it.
Okay, we have a phone call. Let's take the phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Yes, hi, Emmanuel. I wanted to know, do you have a Facebook page? I know this is not the subject, but...
Do I have a Facebook page?
Yeah.
I've dabbled in Facebook. I've dabbled in everything, but I don't give it out because otherwise Facebook would be overloaded.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. How about an email?
Yeah, you can email me.
What would that be?
It's Emmanuel.
Okay.
At 2600.com.
2600.com. Okay, thank you.
That's all you wanted to know. All right.
Thank you.
Let's take this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, what's going on? Listen, I'm pretty passionate about the rail thing as well. The thing of it is, the reason I didn't call it is because you wanted to hear people who are against it. I'm sort of kind of for it. We kind of know that already. So.
All right, well, maybe nobody's against it then. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people just don't realize that they have a voice. Tell us why you're for it and where you're located.
Well, right now I'm on the Ocean Parkway where they find all those dead people. But anyhow,
isn't that a great road to take? You avoid all the traffic by taking the Ocean Parkway, and it's just a small highway on the south shore of Long Island. I like it. It's good for the rush hour.
What it is, it goes way out of my way, but at least I'm moving. I'm not sitting on a parkway beeping
exactly
at somebody or whatever it is.
Yeah. Now imagine if that was a train. Wouldn't that be cool?
Oh, Long Island Sail Road? Yeah. You're not kidding.
Yeah.
I first started traveling about 5 or 6 years ago, and when I got off the airplane and I touched down in France, there were trains everywhere, and I, you know, don't speak French, don't know the language. I started traveling, and it took me about a half an hour to learn the entire system, from the TGV, the Thalys, and all that, through the Gare du Nord train station.
Oh, that's a great station, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's, you know... I was able to get, I saw about 13 countries, I think, like I said, about 5, 6 years ago. I saw about 13 countries. I didn't stay in each country as long as I wanted to, but the thing of it was, I was able to get to almost all those countries,
mm-hmm.
almost,
yes,
with a train.
Yes.
You know, and it was great. It really was. It's fast, efficient. Now, my girlfriend, she lives in Japan.
Oh, boy.
I go back and long distance, right? I go back and forth.
No, I'm just thinking of the train network. It's incredible in Japan.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I wanted to get on as many lines as I possibly could. I took the Shinkansen all the way to Kyoto and all up around down through there, and it was just unbelievable. You know, it's just the idea that they have it and we don't.
Right, you'd think that would be something to sort of wake up the nationalism in people, to say we can do better than they, we can have a better rail network. Instead, we just kind of give up, and we lag behind so much, and we get all depressed and defensive, and we don't live in as pleasant a place as we could live in.
Well, I tell you, I know a lot of people, the first thing they're going to say, well, the United States is not physically built like Europe. It's a lot bigger, it's this, it's that. A lot of times I don't know what to say, but it just seems to me that if it was so much bigger, it seems that it would be easier to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking. It seems like it would be a lot easier to do if it's a bigger country. I mean, Japan. I mean, they squeeze in trains everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Japan, China, Korea, then France, England, Germany, Scotland, you know. Well, I don't know about... I don't remember seeing too many trains in Scotland, but I'm sure they're there.
They probably have a better network than we do. I believe they do, actually. But China is huge. China is very big, and they have trains. Even India has massive trains. Not high-speed rail in India, but they do have massive train networks. They realize that getting from one place to another is vital, and easy with trains. And China is really investing in the high-speed rail aspect of it, so they're going to have an incredibly modern infrastructure in just a few years, where we're just sitting on the sidelines.
I can't remember how many times I'm driving along the road and I've got a Long Island Railroad train next to me, and even with traffic lights, I still manage to get to where I got to get to before the train does. I remember one time I missed the train at Stony Brook, so I got in my car, drove to St. James. I got in before the train.
Yeah, you know, you should not be able to do that. I've done that too, and you should not be able to beat the train. It should be faster. That's the whole point. It should also be cheaper.
Yeah, that's another thing. What is it from Mineola to, when you go into town in Manhattan, it's $19, something stupid like that, round trip?
It's enough to make people not want to take it and drive instead. So, you know, it makes me wonder where the priorities are. Maybe if we started in certain key areas and simply built it up around major cities and then link those together, that might be the better way to do it. Because, honestly, when you look at all these countries that we've been talking about and you ask the people there, Is the high-speed rail, is the rail network in your country a bad thing? Do you want to get rid of it? I guarantee nobody's going to say yes.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. You're correct. That would make sense. I haven't thought of it that way.
Yeah.
But I wish we did. I mean, I like trains myself. You know, a little bit of a hobbyist, but that's not besides the point. But it's just that it's a lot easier, you know? And, you know, I've taken the LIRR to Manhattan, and I've gotten on with Metro North to go to Connecticut, and that's a hassle. It really honestly is.
That brings up another point, which is something that just really gets to me. I've stood in the train station in Amsterdam. I've gone up to a ticket agent, and I said, I want to buy a ticket to Copenhagen in Denmark. All right, and that ticket agent is able on their computer, and I could do this on a screen myself too, but it's better to talk to a person because they can figure out all kinds of alternate routes and things. They were able to book me a ticket from Amsterdam through Germany, changing trains in Germany, going to Hamburg, getting on another train, going up into Denmark. And the whole thing was laid out where I knew what time the train was, what track the train was going to be on in a distant city, where my seat was on that distant train. They were able to do all of that in that train station for three different countries. Whereas if I go to the Stony Brook train station right now and I say, I want to buy a ticket to White Plains, you can't do that because the Long Island Railroad does not connect to Metro North, even though they're both owned by the MTA. You can't even buy a ticket that goes from one to the other. You have to go to one station, then buy a ticket from some other station to go to where you want to go. It's absurd. It's so backwards.
Unbelievable.
All right, listen, thanks for your call.
All right, not a problem. Good luck.
Going to take one more quick one. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, I might be one against it.
Okay, make it quick because we only have about a minute.
Will the cost go down? Because right now it costs me more to take Amtrak. I live in Atlanta.
Yeah, no, it should go. I mean, it's supposed to go down. If it's not going down, someone's not doing something right. The prospect of high-speed rail and the cost of what is charged for it are two different things. I mean, do you think a high-speed rail network at a decent price is a good thing?
Yeah, but it should cost less than flying.
Yeah, I agree with you. I totally agree. It should be more comfortable. It should be not as costly. I mean, when you buy a plane ticket for something like $99 to get from one coast to another, that's heavily subsidized. There's no way that is what it costs. But yet they charge ridiculous prices. There's low-cost airlines in England that charge £1 to get from England to the continent. Obviously, that's not really what it costs. If we had a train network that was subsidized, maybe not so crazily, but in some way, we might actually get more people supporting it.
Thank you for taking my call.
All right, thanks. I'm sorry I did most of the talking there, but...
Oh, no, that was really insightful. I liked hearing what people had to say.
All right. We're out of time. And oh, I love this song. This is a song about a train. Hang on, I'm going to pause it because otherwise I'd be speaking over Arlo Guthrie. But this is a train that was a hit when I was a kid, all about a train that goes to New Orleans called The City of New Orleans, written by Steve Goodman, actually, but really, really cool song. And I realize, as we about to leave now, that nothing has really changed since that song was written, or probably in the last century, concerning the rail network in this country. Let's hope that changes.
Yes, let's hope.
Let's hope I'm back in 2 weeks, not on grand jury duty. We'll find out. Here's Arlo Guthrie, OTW at 2600.com. We'll see you. Good night.
Good night.
Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors, 25 sacks of mail. All along the southbound Odyssey, the train pulls out at Kankakee and rolls along past houses, farms, and fields. Passing trains that have no name, and freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of the rusted automobiles. Good morning. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Dealing card games with the old man in the club car. Penny a point, ain't no one keeping score. Pass the paper bag that holds the bottle. And the sons of Pullman porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpets made of steel. And mothers with their babes asleep are rocking to the gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rails is all they feel. Good morning. Don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Nighttime on the city of New Orleans, changing cars in Memphis, Tennessee. Halfway home, and we'll be there by morning. Through the Mississippi darkness, rolling down to the sea. But all the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream, and the steel rail still ain't heard the news. The conductor sings his songs again. The passengers will please refrain. This train got to disappear in railroad blues. Good night, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.